guys. Welcome back to another YouVersion 2 podcast. You're with Shawnee C and Brent. Brenny P. Apologies. Guys, another Q&A today. We've got a few, or a couple anyway, pretty cool listener questions. Hopefully you get something from that. Before we get to that, though, as always, we'll talk about what's been happening in our lives the past 7 days.
You've had heaps. Yeah, go first.
What's on? You want me to go first?
Yeah, because if we do, that means I got a couple, you got a lot.
We'll start with last Saturday, and you made predictions about marathon. So I completed my second marathon, got the medal to prove it. This year was a lot. I'd say honestly, it was easier than the year before, and that's not because I was better equipped or because I, you know, had put more effort and training in. It was basically because I went slower, and so therefore it was easier. It wasn't easy. I suffered a fair bit, but I did it with a couple other people. Still a member of the YBC tribe, but former member of the gym, Aaron Warburton, who a lot of people know and love. He completed his first marathon as well, and his housemate Carla. We all went together. Just before we start, though, before I tell you how it went down, Benny was there, member of the gym, and all excited. And I thought, you know, we're going to run maybe the first couple K together, and then probably the pace we're setting won't be hot enough for Benny, and he'll move ahead of us. Literally at the start line, he high-fived me. He went, "See you later," and he went off. So I didn't see Benny until he lapped us right near the end.
He lapped you?
He lapped us, yeah.
How long is a lap?
7K laps.
Okay.
So we ran probably the first 2.5 laps, I reckon. So maybe like 17, 18K. And then we started doing some walk a K, run a K. And then we got to the point where Warbo was in a world of pain, mate. Let's just say that. It was in a world of hurt. It was in the pain cave deep inside it. And he had to walk the rest of the way, probably a good 2 laps. So about 14K walking. So the pace dropped from being pretty okay to being very, very slow. And I was hurting too. So I was happy to walk. And I wanted to help him through to the end as well, because he actually was in a lot of pain. So I stayed with him. I probably could have ran off a little bit, a few more times. I could have done a few more K of running. But we stayed and we finished together. And yeah, got the marathon done. It was pretty cool. Like, my wife and kids came down, Mel, Samson and Poppy came down, and Emily, and they did the last lap with us. So that's an indication of how hot the pace was. They were able to come around for the last lap with us. And but yeah, we got to the end. Benny finished well before us. He wasn't there when we got to the end. He was already probably home and had a shower by then. So he did well. But yeah, us three, we finished. And
how long did it take?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think it was over 6 hours, probably closer to 6.5 hours. So okay. It's slow. Last year I did it about 5.
I saw the ending and I honestly thought, like, this little smart ass in me, yeah, I was like, Warbo just bowled ahead of it, so you beat Sean.
You know what we said? I was going to do that to him. He couldn't run. I said, with 40 meters to go, like just near the end, I said, hey, let's do it. Let's just do a sprint finish and whoever wins, wins.
Yeah, for it.
He said, I can't do it. You win. And so I took a step in front of him and I went, oh, he's actually not going to go. Like, he can't run. So I just...
So I was 100%. We had robotic Ben came out.
Yeah.
Warbo got full.
Real full.
And did you cramp?
I did cramp.
Oh, come on.
I cramped badly. And that's when we started walking instead of running, the cramps sort of... They were there for a little while longer and then they went away. Whereas last year, I just had this thing in my head that I wanted to push as hard as I could, no matter what. And I had bad cramps, but I ran through cramps for a long period of time last year.
So you find that
very painful.
I'm so inexperienced at this, but my head would say that if you had your pace but then had to slow it down for someone, like, do you feel like your rhythm gets broken? It does make the experience a bit harder. Like, not that you're literally carrying someone, but you're conforming to their pace, which might be slower than yours. Is that real?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably real for a runner. You probably have a cadence that you like to hit. I don't have that yet. I haven't run on anywhere near enough kilometers to have developed
an
ideal running pace. If I ever get there, I will let you know. But no, I was okay to walk or just jog run or whatever it was. I didn't do it easy, don't get me wrong. I was in a lot of pain at the end. I was glad to sit down and rest for a while. I had a nice bath when I got home. I didn't move much off the couch.
Is jog run technical? I imagine jog that's something like, you know, he's feeling like, I've got to get to the bathroom.
Yeah. It was like
is that a jog run?
It's like it's like when you're looking for your car in the car park and you can't find it, and you're sort of like, you're not sprinting up and down looking for it.
It's a bit more frantic than a walk.
Yeah, you're just like, you're on a really fast walk
looking
for your car. Fun. That was the marathon. Look, lots has been on this week for me. I've got lots. I wrote some notes. These are all just like points that have just come up. Like, me and Mel did something probably that we've never done. We certainly have not done since we've had kids. So, last 5.5 years. And I can't remember doing it very often ever in my life. And that is, we binge watched a Netflix series in 2 days. And the first day of that, like, so the first time we started watching it, I was up at 5 the next morning for work. And I tell a lie. I was up at 4 the next morning for work. Yeah, it was 4. And I went to bed after 1. And I've never done that.
Not enough.
And I regretted it.
Yeah.
I regretted it badly when my alarm went off. But this Netflix series called Strangers. And it's just one of those series that, you know, it was pretty good. It was, like, I'm not saying it's a great series of all time. It was pretty good. But it was the way they produced it, the endings were just so gripping. Like, so, like, I have to find out what happens next. And so you'd watch the next episode and you'd find out, you know, what you wanted to find out. But then the new things come in and you watch that to the end, and then they leave another cliffhanger. It just happened over and over again. And to be honest, man, if I didn't have to wake up at 4 or I didn't even look up at the clock, I'd probably watch the whole series all night. We were on the edge of our seat watching this show. Strangers.
Yikes.
Strangers. It's about this family, I guess. They're in Britain, somewhere in England. And a stranger comes up and just starts dropping bombs, like secrets about their family. And she's like, it's hard to explain. She's just like this random person that comes up and says, "Hey, your wife, remember how your wife lost the baby?" And he's like, "Who are you? Like, you don't know who I am." And she's like, "She faked the pregnancy. It wasn't real." He's like, "What the fuck are you saying?" He goes, "Check your credit card statement on this date from this site. Check the site. You'll find out it was all fake." And then she's like, "Leave." And like, this lady, the stranger, was doing it to all these different people, and they were all finding out all these weird secrets about their loved ones, feeling like they didn't know them. But eventually the whole story ties together and you find out that it's a bit of a, I'm not going to give it away, but yeah, interesting storyline.
I'll put on the list.
Yeah, pretty gripping stuff. Don't stay up to 1 o'clock and watch it. It's not much.
No, I wouldn't last.
So that happened. Do you want to jump in yet? I've got a few more.
Yeah, I had a really good morning on Saturday. We went for a surf with a couple of crew from the gym, which is really, really nice. It was a very mellow morning. It was nice to get up, like, just got there just on, or a little bit after sunrise, which is cool. The water was packed.
Was it?
Oh, man.
Cold?
Nah, it was very refreshing.
Wet suit on?
Yeah, that was probably a little bit. I went probably a bit, probably didn't need it, to be honest.
Mm.
Well, it was warm. They're very warm.
Mm.
But yeah, it was packed.
I've never got into surfing. I'm more a natural body surfer. When people see me, they go, "There's a dolphin. He's a natural dolphin." I don't belong on a board.
I love watching you get in the water.
I don't belong on a board. Why is that?
What's your fear? Seaweed?
Sharks.
Oh, sharks, okay.
Oh, and stingers and like stuff like that. I basically don't like anything in the water except the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the water. I'm a good swimmer. Very competent in the water. I just don't like anything but water to be in my water. So, might be weird. Anyway, continue your surfing story.
That was good. It was just nice. It was refreshing just to, I don't know, it really took me back. Surfing, something that was a really big, I guess, part of my life as well. And it just ticked so many boxes for me. It was like a place where, you know, you don't have your phone on you. It's a time where, you know, it can be really fun and playful. Other times, you know, depending on the weather and where you are, it can be like pretty, you know, you can push boundaries and, you know, challenge yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, yeah, it's such a, it's really good to do that. It really actually, I just came back very full after, you know, a lot of my time is spent, you know, around people and with people. It's just nice to just, it literally just cleared everything, filled the cup up. And it's nice to have stuff like little things that I probably, you know, realize I don't make enough time for, like just sitting down, just having a coffee with people that I enjoy their company afterwards.
Yep.
It's really, yeah, I should be putting in my like calendar more frequently.
Okay. Cool. I had a meeting yesterday morning. I've joined up part of a mentoring program at my stepdaughter's high school. You're 11 kids. They each get a mentor. They don't each get a mentor, actually, that's a lie. There's about 200 kids in the grade, 48 mentors, of which I'm one of. And I get one kid, and I shadow him for the year. Or he hangs around me for a year.
Buddy program.
Sort of, yeah.
Big brother.
Yeah, I don't really know what to expect from it. We did like a training course yesterday, basically bringing up, you know, all the kind of things that might come up in conversations, questions they might ask, and problems they might want to help you, like ask you to help solve, and just how you sort of go about navigating those conversations and things that are within your realm of like trying to help them with, things that are maybe not in your realm, and just sort of general sort of guidelines, I guess, on how to navigate the next year. We catch up every month at the school, and we're encouraged to contact them via email between meetings as well. And at some point I have to organize a shadowing day where they come and see what I do. So this person obviously has been matched. They try as best they can to match them with a mentor in an industry that they might want to work in some point. So from that regard, it's sort of like a work experience, sort of like learn about the career I might want to get involved in. But in another way, they said a lot of the things that will come up with these kids won't be about work at all. It'll be a lot about what I want to do after school. I don't know if I should go to uni. My parents want me to do this. And then a lot of it will also be like them having problems juggling their like study and social life and, you know, fitting everything in if they have a job. And, you know, a lot of them will have relationship breakdowns throughout the year and like helping them through those situations. And so it is sort of like a work experience thing, but it's also more just like having another adult. It's interesting what they said, actually. They said outside their parents, a lot of these kids, this will be the first time they will have had a conversation with an adult that's not their mum or dad in a one-on-one setting, maybe ever.
Yeah, honestly, how long have they been doing for? It sounds pretty, I guess this would be this pretty new. This is the fifth year. You're right, which is relatively new.
Yeah, because
there was nothing like this when we were back at high school.
And I thought that was odd at first, but then when you think about it, like, if they're in sporting teams, they're in a group situation with the adult who the coach is. In class, even most of the time, it's always in a group setting, very rarely. And actually, she made the distinction there is having a conversation with an adult who's not a parent in a positive situation.
Yeah.
A lot of these kids, at some point in their life, will have been in trouble with a teacher and maybe sent to someone's office or talked to the teacher after school or whatever. And that's a one-on-one setting, but that's in like a really negative space. So this is the first time that they have an opportunity to talk to an adult in a positive manner and try and sort of get some help from them. So
I think that's really cool, because like I came from, like I know at our high school, I felt like, yeah, it's either at home. And the truth is, like, I think, you know, regardless of what you see on the outside, like, if that's your only influence, it is quite, you know, a bubble.
Yeah.
And really, like, I formed and I still have amazing relationships with maybe, like, one or two teachers from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really think, like, it's actually quite rare that you have that.
Yeah.
I actually think it's not a coincidence now that we are friends, that we connect, and that there is, because they were a huge influence on me. We had similar interests.
Yeah.
And I was willing to learn from them. They got me. You know, there's other teachers at high school, we like, I'm just ticking the box. Like, I don't resonate with you. I don't like you. And it's also a time where there's a lot of change and hormones and stuff happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a very developmental stage. And I think the more people you can put in front of someone, like, just to give an opportunity, you answer one of my questions, I'm going to say, the matchup's going to be a big part there. Because if you get someone, you're like, mate, you are nothing like me and I'm not going to share.
They match you with somebody, generally speaking, who want to be in the similar field of interest to you, where you're currently working or what your experiences are, they have similar interests. So I matched up with a dude and I know a little bit about him. I don't know a lot about him, and I'm going to meet him next week. We have our first mentoring breakfast, which is next week. It's just an hour every month.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes down. I'm sure I'm going to have some pretty cool stories. Obviously all confidential, so no real details will be revealed, but happy to share like my general experience about what goes on. But I think it's cool, and it is interesting to me. Another thing that, you know, the careers advisor there was talking about, you know, basically about why they put the program on in the first place, is number one, because they don't have a lot of anyone outside their parents to sort of help through problems. And number two was, number two is like that, the thing with teenagers is they're very emotional, but they're not quite good enough at that point. So we're talking about 15, 16 year olds here, or actually 16 year olds and 17 year olds, at articulating their feelings. So they're very good at saying things like, this teacher doesn't like me, or I always get picked on, or my mum never always yells at me, or my brother always does this to me. They're not very good at articulating what they mean and diving deeper into what they're actually feeling and why they're feeling the way they're feeling. So part of the stuff that we try and go through with them is getting them to A, get more confident talking to an adult, and B, get better at articulating how they feel and why they feel like that. So it's like a personal development sort of side to it as well.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, we see that with the youth here as well. And it's one of the first things I say to the parents, that, like, just so you know, like, part of this is we want to have a bigger influence than just the gym.
Yeah.
But that also means you have to remove yourself, because we don't want them in parent, because they're already programmed how they're going to behave around parents.
Yeah.
And it is like, it is a really cool mentorship. I love that initiative.
Yeah, so it's fun.
What, 150 more of you?
There's 48 of us. There's 48 of us.
That's a good step.
Should be a bit of fun. And before we get the questions, found out yesterday, and that's something interesting. See what you think about this. Who'd be in the top? Not necessarily because you love them, but who's the top five artists, musical? So it could be a band or an individual person, or however you want to interpret that. Who you'd want to see before you die?
Alive, or can they be dead?
They say they have to be alive.
Okay. Because time thing.
It's impossible.
It's a time machine.
Currently living, and that you know is maybe performing, probably helps that they're performing as well.
Oh, you're going to hate one of them. It's going to be so funny. I'll say her last.
Delta Goodrum, surely not.
No.
Not just Bowboy.
No.
Okay.
Oh, man, come on.
Katie Lang, after what I said last week, I get it.
No, she's not on the list. Eminem again, because I feel like it's always going to evolve that you knew I was going to say that. I would love to see, I'll say it now because it's at the forefront of my mind, I'd want to see Beyonce.
What an error. What an error in judgment that would be.
Yeah.
Hopefully you get free tickets for that one.
Yeah.
I would want to pay money for that.
Oh no, because I did watch the part of the documentary about her. I think it was after one of the, like, becoming mum, like her mission to get back on stage and the preparation that goes on to what is, we just see as the showcase that is her.
Mm.
I was like, she's an animal. An animal. I was like, that's awesome. Who else do I want to see? I'd love a G Unit reunion.
Okay, so you go on a theme here. Go, keep going. Isn't there any artists that, even if you're not your favourite, you're like, I'd just love to see this person or that group because, like, they're an all-time group?
I felt like that with Rolling Stones.
Yeah, you go. That'd be a classic example. Have you seen them?
Yeah.
Good?
Yeah, amazing. Okay, and I felt like that with you too, as well.
All right.
But my main thing was going to you too, was to see Jay-Z.
Oh yeah,
because he opened for him.
I seen it. I was there too. I was right. Wahlburgers tickets right at the bottom.
And that was a thing. And until it went on, it was really cool. It was so good to see, like, all the OG, like,
yeah,
you know, the generation above us, like, that was their bread and butter.
Yeah,
like, gone wild. And obviously we knew all the songs as well, so it's pretty cool. Then when it started to get too preachy for me, it started to get a little bit. I was like, I just want tonight. I just want the show. Save it. So there you go, there's five.
I'm seeing Elton John next up there.
Oh, that'd be cool. Oh, I'll add someone in, man. I want to see Bublé. That's a different genre for me.
That's what I was trying to say. I was trying to get it, like, just people. I don't need to see him again. I'd love to, but he would not on my list because I've seen him four times. But Bublé would definitely on my list.
Yeah, that'd be a show.
I've seen Queen, obviously not with Freddie Mercury, but with Adam Lambert. Excellent. Really good. And Elton John, he's on the list for me.
So that's all time. Yeah, I'm
cool. He's like, just everyone just knows all his songs, man. He's old as hell. He actually just walked out of a concert in Auckland last week because he lost his voice, so hopefully he's found it by next Saturday. But
why is that, when he's on
next Saturday?
Oh, cool.
Sydney Sitters.
Yeah,
looking forward to Elton John. I've heard a lot of people say he's really good. I feel like he's one of the guys who, at some point, he's not performing anymore.
Yeah.
He's getting on. He's been performing for so long. How long can he continue to belt out those tunes?
Wow. Well, Elton, if you're listening, reach out for, you know, immunity tips and, you know, travel tips to get you here. And
if you need it, yeah. If you want to drop on the podcast.
Friday week. We're busy next week.
We're
booked.
But
week after.
We probably could find some time for Elton. Definitely find some time for Elton. So that's it. And finally, last one before we jump to the question. Very last one this time. A very small tidbit. For all those Survivor fans, jump on Channel 9, catch up. And there's a new season started in... Currently, All Stars is on in Australia. Excellent season. Go, Harry. But if you love Survivor like I do, jump on Channel 9 Catch Up, and America have launched their 40th season of Survivor, which is fucking crazy. And this season, the name is escaping me, what the name of the season's called, but essentially what it is they're all winners. 20 winners. The people who have won Survivor before, they've got 20 of them together, and they're doing a season. So all of them obviously know how to play. They've all won. One of the ladies on there, Sandra, has won twice. Boston Rob, who'd be the most popular Survivor player of all time, is on it. His wife, Amber, who we met on the show back in like 2005 or 6, or maybe even earlier, maybe 2 or 3. They met together on the show. He got engaged on the show at the end of the show.
To her. Right.
And they were the last two standing, and she won it. But he won as well because I guess he's getting married to her, so money's his, in a way. But then he went back on another season for like an all-star season, and he won that. So he's won a season as well. But
are they still married?
They're still married. And they're both on the show.
This is going to be
and amazing. They've got 4 kids.
Well, firstly.
Well done, whoever's looking after the kids.
Yeah, that's a great break for them.
Yeah, the great break.
Holiday, yeah.
And that's literally at the start. They were talking about why they came on. And she said, look, I jumped at the opportunity because it's just the time away from the kids. Like, I love my kids, but to have... a break is...
At what point, I'll ask you a hypothetical question now as well. 20 contestants, but one of them's Mel, right?
Yeah.
It's an individual show. There's only one winner.
Mm.
Does the competitive part of you... Like, of course, there'd be opportunities that you can, you know, in terms of voting and stuff, you're obviously not going to vote your partner out.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully vice versa. What happens if strategically she needed to go? Would you ever make that call? Or no. Would you, like, but if you knew, like, it was the only thing to keep you on the show?
No, what would happen, I think what's going to happen with Rob and Amber, because it's only just started and they're on separate tribes at the moment. So they have no influence on each other at the moment anyway.
But don't tribes compete?
They compete against each other, which I would happily do against Mel, because it's another team. So it's my team versus your team. But then at some point in the show, when they usually get down to 12 or 10, so at the moment there's 20, they merge tribes and just become one tribe.
It's arguably then a bit of an advantage, hey, like having your partner there.
Which is why it's not going to work for them, ultimately, because the other people will vote them out. But yeah, no, I would never vote. You always... Because the thing with Survivor is you win alone, but you can't win alone. Like, you have to have a group of people to get you through to the end. Like, and you keep voting together until eventually you start having to vote for each other. I would try and get my wife and me in a group of other people and sell to them about the idea of keeping us together, because obviously they're thinking in their heads, we don't want you together because you're never going to vote against each other.
2-for-1 meal deal.
Yeah. So, but that happens all the time in Survivor. It's funny. When Rob and Amber won it, but when they became the last two, they were together on the show in terms of, it was so obvious that they were a group, a couple, for like 10 or 11 tribal councils, like 10 or 11 opportunities to vote off. They were always together and they never got split up. So it can happen. It's a weird game, mate. It's a mindfuck game. I know I like Survivor, but it is definitely the best reality TV show on TV, because it's such a strategic, tough game to play, to understand what other people are thinking, because everyone is on there to win. Everyone's on there to lie, and you have to try and work out what's true and what's not, who's real and who's not. And it's fucking hard.
You're attached. I'm so unattached. That's why I love Love Island. There you go.
Yeah, that says a lot about you.
Question time.
Question. That's 25 minutes of jibber jabber. If you don't like that,
good.
If I offended you, good. So, question number one. What do I do? This is a direct question. What do I do to break through a bench press plateau? First of all, placo is an interesting word because it's spelled funny. Second of all, do you want me to start this?
Yeah, let's go letter for letter. P. L. You idiot.
Obviously, oh, I'm spelling
Sean it. Can't spell plateau.
Sorry. I thought we were talking about... I said, you want me to start talking about...
Yeah, I
about
thought, like, spelling the word that you said was hard.
P. Yeah.
P.
L.
A.
T.
E.
U.
A-U.
A-U, is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I can't confirm that because my phone's recording, but... And you're not going to confirm it because you think you won. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong. I can't spell. Right. How do you get through one? Well, look, first of all, depends on how long you've been there for. We always tell people, and I know from experience, that if it's just been like sort of one cycle, one 12-week period, you haven't gone up, no big deal. Just move on. But I'm going to give you some practical tips that I've tried before. So the first thing is like to... Depends on a plateau for me. We're talking here, so I know the person that asked me the question. They're talking specifically about they can't get past a certain number for their one rep max. Like they're stuck on this number, right? This guy's stuck on like 130 kilo bench press, and he's been stuck on 130 kilo bench press for one rep for about 6 months, and he can't go through that plateau, is what he's calling a plateau here, right? So the first thing that I do as a coach, but also if you're training by yourself, you self-coach, you can decide or you can work out where you're missing the lift. So the reason you're missing at 130 or what's the next one above 130 is because there's a weakness somewhere. Like there's some part of the lift that's not working for you. So the two big ones for bench press are you either miss on your chest or you miss halfway up. So on your chest means you lower the bar, and when the bar touches your chest, you cannot move it off your chest. So it's stuck on your chest. What I find a lot of people... where they really miss is a lot of people can pop the bar off their chest, but halfway up they get stuck. So depending on where you're stuck in your plateau, depending on where you're missing the lift, is going to depend on what the prescription of like how to try and break through that plateau is going to be. So if you're stuck on your chest, exercises to work that work really well is like a paused bench press. I feel like that part, that area of your lift is largely helped out by really strong shoulders, really strong chest. So you can work on bodybuilding movements to build up your, like the strength and size of your chest and shoulders. And pause benches are really good. A spotto press is really good. So a spotto press is like a pause bench, except you bring the bar down, you maybe leave it maybe 2 inches off your chest, hold it completely still, and then press off that way as well. So I would work those two lifts, I'd work those big two muscle groups, shoulders, chest, even like lats and back. I'd do as much sort of upper body work as I can, and I'd work different rep ranges for those lifts. So the pause bench and the spotto, I would work rep ranges of like really heavy sets of 3, 4, and 5, and also lighter, or not lighter, but more volume style training of sets of 8, 10, 12, and I'd sort of cycle that sort of lifting as my accessory day. So I'd still do my normal bench press day, I'd do another day of an accessory day, and that would include a lot of those style lifts and a lot of different rep ranges and cycle through there. There's obviously a set way you could do that. I'm not going to bore you with all the details, but that's essentially like a nutshell what you could do if you got stuck there. If you got stuck halfway up, that would generally mean that your triceps are not strong enough to lock out, because once the bar is moving and once it gets past a certain point as you're pressing it forward, your triceps really do take over and finish the lift off. So I'd work a lot of triceps. I'd do a lot of things like cable pushdowns. I'd do a lot of like skull crushes. I do some overhead tricep extension with heavy dumbbells or heavy plates. If you don't know what those exercises are, you can just look them up. But also I would do a lot of rack pressing. So if you have access to a rack where you can set the bar up at the height that you miss, so maybe it's like 4, 5, 6 inches off your chest, you set the rack up so that the bar sits at that level, and then you go underneath it and you just press from that height. So it's like a half press almost. Or even like a floor press is good for that as well, because it's very tricep dominant. It's also only half the lift. I think if you spent time doing those lifts at like trying to overload it, so usually you can press a lot heavier at that with that half range of motion, because it's half the range of motion. So you should overload it as much as possible. Do really heavy sets of 3, 4, and 5. And again, I would probably also mix in some bodybuilding style sets of 8, 10 and 12. For that particular one, I found from personal experience and also from coaching a few people that heavy sets work really well with rack presses and with floor press. So I'd focus probably more on the sets of 3, 4 and 5, really heavy triples, really heavy sets of 4 and 5, and overload that muscle and that position as much as possible. So you get super, super strong in that second half of the lift, whilst also using probably bodybuilding style numbers to build up the strength and size of your triceps by doing the push downs and the skull crushes. So that'd be the first probably thing I would do with a bench press bar. So identify where you're weak or where you're missing the lift, and then work and then sort of prescribe a certain couple of exercises and work on building the muscles that are involved in that part of the lift.
Thorough.
You got anything to add to that?
Yeah, a couple of things. Close grip bench press is obviously a classic like thing, so classic, like light your tries up a little bit more. You know, if you're talking 6 months, there is some time to improve. Like I'd say, with some accessory work, I would encourage that person to maybe add in some dumbbell bench press, like heavy as well. I think mm-hmm. you get a greater range of motion out of that, which probably helps, especially getting stuck at the bottom. I think you can, you know, strengthen your shoulders a little bit more that way as well. So that could really, really help. One thing comes down to this is, like, I see it all the time. With people in gym, so we'll go back to the start. Like, this person's problem that they want solved is their one rep max won't go up. So we're talking about one singular lift.
Yeah.
But then if you translate that to training, you want to see a lot of time. I'll use a backwards example, but I think it's the clearest as well. Is, let's just say bench press, we're talking about deadlift.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like, if you're doing a single, you're doing a singular rep one lift, there's a beginning, a middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
But I often see, like, people when they're doing like doubles or triples, the first rep is obviously the beginning, the middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
But then on reps 2 and 3, like, they rely on like rebound.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what you're doing is you're cheating the rep. You didn't do a second rep as a single. So, because what you should have done was actually set a correct tempo for training. And the same thing would go with bench press, overhead press, or whatever you're doing, whatever lift you're trying to improve, is that you want to treat a set of 3. I just tell people, you're doing 3 singles. It's not a triple. There's a difference.
Yep.
And this is where I think people get confused. Like, for example, if you're doing a workout for time, or if the load gets dropped down a lot, like if you said to someone, do 5 sets of 10, like this person is your accessory work, like basic numbers.
Yeah.
It is easy. And they might get a tendency to pump it out, but otherwise I'm not doing that. Like, make the set harder, and harder is adding timing protocols, adding, you know, that restraint to it will make it a hell of a lot harder. So their whole world is thinking about that single.
Yep.
And obviously the basic shit too. Like, no accidents either. Well, maybe it's just what it is, but are there limits with your recovery, nutrition, etc.?
Yeah, definitely look into nutrition and recovery as well. Big ones. I guess my answer was a lot more technical about specifically what you can do, but I think in general what you need to do, especially if you've plateaued for like 6 months, is just take a rest from super hyper-focusing on it as the first port of call. Like, what I would do is tell this person to, like Brent said, start throwing in some dumbbell bench press, even hit some overhead pressing, and just get strong at sort of different pressing movements. And also probably just helps like the mental relief of not worrying about not constantly trying to get that one rep max up all the time. And that's not forever, maybe just 4 or 5 weeks of that would be good. Then coming back to the bench, starting a new cycle again, and like identifying those weaknesses, building up those muscles in the weaker spots, working on the accessory lifts to help that certain part of the lift get a bit stronger, while also, of course, doing your full normal range of motion bench press as well. I think that's how I have done it in the past, and I found best success with that. I think probably what I just mentioned then, I did mention before, is probably super important, and that's just like having a mental break from it. So maybe don't bench press for 4 weeks, and instead dumbbell bench press or incline bench press or overhead press, or do something else that's not bench press specific. Not take time off necessarily, but just do something a little bit different, and then come back to it, be fresh for it, have a plan, and get after it.
That's the most important thing, because this person, I feel, I don't know who the hell you're talking about, it's not relevant. Stop focusing, they're outcome based. Yeah. If I don't get it, yeah, the kind of person probably like kick the bench or something, you'll get frustrated and might take a week off. It's like, just enjoy the journey again, the process of learning, and you know, each training session, rather than fucking 12 weeks and putting pressure on myself and, you know, shit the bed.
And I think it's, I mean, good point now, good time. If you are struggling with any sort of lift or any part of your training and having a plateau, like, make sure you reach out. We're happy to answer questions on the podcast. I know for a fact I'm very willing to give an answer outside the podcast and our DMs, or if you chat to me in person, I'm happy to talk about that. I love this shit. I love talking about this as well. So happy to help out if anyone needs any help with some assistance exercises or a plan to break through a plateau. Happy to help out. Next question. Believe you have it.
Yeah, this came, it was just fresh on my mind. So part of, it wasn't a specific question, but it was something that came up. Well, it was regarding, it's three times this week. Two active clients. One was just on an initial consultation regarding, I guess you would phrase it, as to how alcohol fits in with achieving your goals.
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite, I think it is an interesting conversation to have. But from, I have to put my coach's hat on and ultimately understand that we are getting paid or potentially paid, and you're hiring us to get you an outcome. You want to achieve something. And I've always said this, that it's just, for me, if it's an uphill battle, it's really easy. Like, it's one of the first things we have to consider. So, one of the big things that came out with this, without getting too sciencey about that as well, here's the truth. Like, we've got to be upfront. Like, it's going to be the weekend, and no doubt that, you know, we are going to enjoy a drink or two, or, you know, things like that. Like, I know I feel really good about that, and I don't have any guilt attached to it, right? So I think that's the first thing as well, is like, why are you doing it? Now, what I learned by two examples here was, I just went back to, okay, I want to help you get results, let's go back to numbers, like measurable stuff. And for two out of these three cases, I worked out that we were actually looking overall, like, what was consumed within a week, whether it was like cramming this into a weekend or if we were looking over a 7-day period. Two out of three individuals actually, from what I would ballpark work out, they were probably adding about an eighth day of calories to their overall intake.
So, like, extra whole day of calories?
Extra whole day of calories.
From alcohol?
From alcohol. Crazy. Yeah, only. Yeah. And what I can't factor in here is that that was just, I guess you would say, a regular week, which doesn't factor in those, like, occasions where it's a birthday or an engagement party or a wedding, you're at, and you're going to triple down on what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then, let alone probably on a social level, the decisions you're going to make after consuming that quantity of alcohol. If you're adding in a day's alcohol,
yeah,
you ain't hitting your macros and everything.
Oh, like, mate.
All right.
Not a good decision is made after 11 PM after drinking.
Yeah. So,
cheeseburger.
I like that because I think it's just a very black and white of saying, like, going, okay, cool, like, you realize here, because at the end of the day we're talking about energy, yeah, and it does contain calories, and it's not overcomplicating it to the client. So, you know, obviously there's strategies around that. Like, I want to be practical, and I think exclusion for people is a really bad idea. I think that's, we've got to look at sustainability. It's not realistic. So just saying, hey, look, I'm not going to be the first person to ever say to you, don't ever drink. We'll not do that. We're not that kind of gym. We're not those kind of people to do it. But what I would like to look in as well is going, particularly if someone is having not, you know, if someone doesn't have like a super high quality diet, I think it actually makes it a little bit easier to go, well, sweet, like, let's, you know, you can, for example, if you're having a pizza on that night, you realize a pizza is worth X amount of 100 calories, and that can be replaced with this. Yeah. From a, like, an energy standpoint, a calorie standpoint. And theoretically, like, obviously alcohol is not going to give you any nutritional value or have any, you know, nutritional quality to it. Mm-hmm. But from an energy standpoint, it's still going to remain the same. One of the interesting things was here is we came back to these individuals that I actually didn't believe there to be room to actually take. I didn't want these guys that I was doing consults with to actually take food out to make way for alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, you're going to left with nothing.
Yeah.
So it was then looked at as purely additional. So then I think it came down to priorities with people. And I was saying, look, let's just be real about it. You just might have to adjust the expectation of what you're actually going to achieve or how long it's going to take you to achieve that,
mm-hmm,
if you choose to go by the same behavioral patterns. And it's actually been really, really received well, because I think it's a really black and white way of looking at it. You're not saying no, you're not being mean. But it's also like, it does, and in the end, like, take responsibility for what you're doing. How important is it to you to achieve the goal? And I, you know, probably, you know, 4 times out of 5, it is going to be body composition related.
Yeah.
And it's, I think that's the smartest way to go about coaching it. And there's a difference there between being someone that just, And I think there's enough education out there around it, but I think coaching someone through that, for example, going, cool, well, these choices are going to accumulate to, you know, 1,000 calories in a week, or alternatively, if you go down this path of perhaps, you know, increasing the quality of the alcohol you're consuming or the level of enjoyment you get out of it, you might not want six, you might just want one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then the overall calories are obviously coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, like I said, it's very rare, you know, just say someone, you know, there are people as well who say, look, if this is the goal you want, cut it out. And I have seen that as well, and it works supremely well.
Yeah.
But also have no doubt at some point in the line, that person's going to rebound.
Yeah, I think if you like to drink, it's, and I reckon most people do, like a weekend drink at least. I think it's definitely possible to fit it in. I think it's just all about managing your expectations with what results you're going to get dependent on how much you're drinking. If you're drinking a beer a night and then six on the weekend, yeah, that's a lot. That adds up to a lot, and it's probably not ideal to be sacrificing food to fit in alcohol. I think every now and then, if you wanted to do that, yeah, well, end of the day, it's not going to matter that much. But if you're doing that on the regular, like eating half the calories from food that you should be eating because you want to have a bottle of wine every night, it's probably a deeper problem there than just losing some weight. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting topic. I think a lot of people, now, my experience would say that a lot of people think that if you want to lose weight, you can't drink at all.
And which is completely wrong.
Which is wrong. And yeah. I think they may be thrown off by adhering to any sort of like nutritional plan because of that. They think, well, I don't want to actually engage in this because that means I need to stop drinking on the weekend. And it's not necessarily that. It just maybe means you have to have some different behaviors around you drinking. Yeah, I mean, I like a drink. I like a drink as much as anyone else, but I probably have just adjusted the way I drink. I don't drink like I'm 25 anymore. And I also sort of just have different expectations. Like, a lot of people, I just think it's all about expectations, isn't it? Because I think I speak to a lot of people that want to get a six pack, for example. Six packs, especially for a dude, six packs like a major goal for a lot of people. And it's just like, man, to get down to a six pack, and everyone is different. Some people you see six pack at 12% body fat, 15%. Some people 6%. And like everyone's just different depending on how they're built. And some people just aren't willing to do what it takes to get there. And I also just think they don't need to worry about that.
Yeah,
six pack's not going to change your life, dude. Like, so I've had a six pack and I have not had a six pack. Like, and I'm just on the same person, just with or without one. So I feel like just set your life up so the way you enjoy it, but also sort of just a little bit more responsibility around your drinking and sort of just an understanding about what it's actually meaning in terms of saying to a coach or saying to somebody, hey, I really want to lose 10 kilos, but I also want to drink a case of beer each week. It's like there has to be some sort of expectation management happening there. It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, and I feel like our role as coaches and the main thing we can do there is awareness. And that's, I feel like it's worked really, really well this week. Just say, hey, did you realize you're having an ace?
I was going to say, yeah.
That is enough for you.
The awareness is enough, man. Like, these people want this result and they probably didn't realize that they're drinking enough alcohol to equate to another full day of calories.
Yeah.
They're never going to out-train that. They're never going to, like, that's what it is. And so that awareness might make them go, you know what? I actually don't need to drink that much. It's sort of just a habit that's crept in, and I still want to have a drink with, you know, my friends on the weekend, but I probably don't need the midweek ones, or I probably don't need to have eight on the weekend. I probably just have four and still have just as good a time. And therefore, I'm getting closer to my goals and I'm sort of not restricting myself. I'm sort of just, yeah.
I feel it's just much more a sustainable way. So like, if you can operate from that space where you're going, I am currently moving forwards. I think this is the ultimate too, is like progress with your results and be able to indulge in, it's not an indulgence because it's fit in the things that you genuinely say, no, I enjoy that. It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And it's coming from a good place.
And it's, I mean, sub alcohol out for any of those words. Like, I like to drink alcohol. I like to eat a pizza. I like to eat a burger.
Sure.
I like to eat chocolate. Like, whatever those things are that we've all been told are really bad for us can be fitted into anyone's nutritional plan or the way anybody eats, as long as it's just done intelligently and with an understanding of what it actually means.
Expectation is.
And so going, it works, yeah.
Like, I like to refer it as like the minimum effective dosage. So going, you know, to achieve the goal you want, maybe you don't need to train 6 days a week, but maybe four, and better consciously, you know, getting more sleep and high quality nutrition will get you there.
Yeah.
And if you can, and people go, wow, like that's crazy, like these guys said I can actually include alcohol in my plan. Of course you can. And then I guess, like, once again, it comes back to the awareness. Hopefully if that person can see consistent patterns of growth and change and results, whatever that happens to be, then I actually would think it gives them a better position. So for example, if there is a wedding or a birthday or something that is an actual occasion, not just the occasion being it's Sunday, there should be no guilt attached to it. I think that's a great space to operate from. But, you know, obviously if someone says, I need this goal by this time, sweet. I guess because once again, this what is the questions did stem from alcohol. I'm not going to fight an uphill battle with people.
Yeah. Good. All right, that's enough, I think. We're good. Anything more to add?
That's that. I'm going to go listen to Elton on Spotify.
Elton, bro. I'm going to get back into Elton. He's one of those people, I think you just listen to it, one album, like his greatest hits, and you're just back on with Elton. I need to train for it, I think.
You'll know
it. I'll know it on John.
Can you...
Tiny Dancer.
Are you going to dress up?
Definitely not.
No.
I'm going to dress up. I'm going to wear jeans. That's dressing up for me.
Can you at least get some like novelty sunnies?
Like, oh, yeah. Elton
classic? I reckon that'd be...
If I find some, I will.
Okay.
I'm not going to go out of my way to find them, but if I walk upon some, I'll purchase them.
You know, like a purple lens or something?
Oh, yeah. Like, he's got, like, the aviators, but the big ones, hey, with, like, coloured glasses.
Yeah, normally coloured, yeah. He's gone way more eclectic than that, too. But for you, that'd be all right. You're an Elton John.
I'm an Elton John.
Yeah.
I can do what I want. Within reason. All right. Guys, thanks for listening in. As always, we appreciate your support. Make sure you share on your socials. Particular Instagram stories is a good one. Tag us, tag your friends, tell them to listen in. And if you can, leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. See you next week.
Later.